Members, I'm going to call the meeting to order so we can get started today. Welcome, everyone. First order of business is approval of minutes. Representative Sawick, would you move?
So moved.
Approval of minutes. Representative Sawick moves approval of the minutes. We have it for three dates, members, February 21st, 25th, and 27th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. The minutes are approved. Representative Winkler, you want to come up to the table? And Representative Sundin, would you like to?
Mr. Chair, first I'd like to thank the author for his hard work on this very important piece of legislation. And with great pleasure, I would move that House File 92 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy.
Representative Sundin moves that House File 92 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy. And I believe you also have a author's amendment. Would you like to move that as well?
I would move that amendment.
Representative Sundin moves amendment DE1, the author's amendment. Is there any discussion to that? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion is approved. Representative Winkler, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. First of all, thank you to all the members of the committee who've spent, I think, something like 4.5 hours talking about the economic impact of the minimum wage, the business impact, the impact on the people who receive it, and all of the things that a bill like this can do. I'm not going to recapitulate all those hours of testimony and discussion, except to say, first of all, that this DE1 amendment is the substance of a bill that I introduced as a separate bill, and we are inserting this language into this file for the sake of aligning it with the Senate file. So there's no other purpose for this DE1 language than to just line up House and Senate jackets. That's the only purpose for doing it this way. This was introduced separately. And members, what the bill does is to raise the minimum wage for large employers to $8.35 an hour by August 1st of this year, to $9.45 per hour by August 1st of 2014, and $10.55 per hour on August 1st, 2015. For small employers, it goes to $6.50, $7.75, and caps out at $9 per hour. The bill also raises the training wage to $6.07 this year, $7.24 next year, and $8.41 per hour next year. And finally, Mr. Chair and members, the bill raises the minimum wage based on inflation, which is not something we have done in previous minimum wage bills, or statutes. So, Mr. Chair, members, that is the substance of the bill. I believe we've discussed it extensively. I'm happy to take any questions.
Members, opportunity for questions. Representative Mensa?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I just wanted to let you know I called my family last night and talked to them about the implications of this bill on our business, and found my stepmom very supportive, and it re-encouraged me for my support of the bill. So I just wanted to thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Metz, I think even if it's a mother or stepmother, if you're pleasing your mother when you are working at the legislature, you're doing good things.
Absolutely.
Representative Benson?
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Winkler, just for clarification, I don't know that I need to go into any more economic talk. I think we covered most of it yesterday. But clarification, is my understanding, are there two bills in the Senate regarding minimum wage? Because I'm not aware of a bill that has the same numbers. So can you clarify that?
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, as in many things, the Senate bill is far more cautious and less far-reaching than what the House would like to pass. And so the file numbers line up, but the vision does not quite yet.
So, okay, thank you. Just for the record, so that members know, the Senate file still mirrors the original 92 and not the delete all amendment that we heard this morning.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, that's correct.
Representative Euclid?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just a couple of things. We've sat through a lot of hearings on this, and we've heard from a number of economists and everything else. And I think this we all care about people. That's what this thing is about. We care about people and a living wage and how they manage to get by in this difficult society and stuff. But, you know, and I think it's almost classic from the standpoint of the two parties, and the Republican Party has always, I guess, really stood for businesses and things, and we heard from so many business people about how this would affect their businesses. And that is very important. I really think it is. And as this bill winds its way through the process, I think we definitely have to take that into consideration. We all want to have a vibrant economy. And if the producers of jobs, if the business people are not able to create jobs, it's not going to matter what the minimum wage is. You could have the minimum wage at $20, but if there's no jobs. And my colleague here, Representative Benson, mentioned yesterday just how fragile the economy is. And it really is. And we heard from our business people about that. And I know one thing. You can look at all the gobbledygook we got from those guys, but it really is kind of common sense that if you hire somebody at $10 an hour, they have to provide $10 worth of service to that employer. And if they don't, that employer is going to do a couple of things, and we heard about that. They're going to cut employees, they'll reduce service, they'll raise prices, or they'll go out of business. If they do that in this fragile economy and there's less jobs, it's not going to matter about the minimum wage. So I would just urge everybody, as this bill makes its way through, for a little moderation on some of this stuff. One of the Senate bills, in my estimation, might have some good merit, and it might be time to take a look at some of this stuff. But what we see here, Representative Winkler, is really a drastic shock to the business community, and I'm very concerned about that. And if we have jobs and we create a vibrant economy, those wages, and I think we all know that, those wages are going to increase anyhow because of supply and demand. And demographically, as the baby boomer generation, which I'm part of, ages and retires, there's going to be a labor shortage in this country. There will be. And the market's going to take care of wages, because employers will be competing for employees. And free market forces will take care of that. So those are my comments. I just urge a little moderation on some of this as it goes through. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good. Thank you for your comments. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm one of those small business owners, Representative Winkler, and we're in construction. So my industry has had a tremendous hit when the housing market fell to nothing. My family income dropped by 30%, forced complete changes in my family. So, and I think we had, it was interesting because we had so much testimony from so many different fields, and some people were representing those that cleaned hotel rooms and worked in service, and I have done all of those jobs, Representative Winkler. I have cleaned hotel rooms, I've cleaned public bathrooms, and doing all these things as I was going through graduate school, paid for it all by myself. All of these changes, and not just the minimum wage, raising it all the way up to 1055 plus index for inflation, the plus index for inflation, I think, scares me more than anything as a business owner, Representative Winkler. That's incredibly frightening because it's so unpredictable. And we have had low inflation, but I'm old enough, and you probably are of that same age, where we remember, and Representative Fisher is acknowledging, there was times when we had very, very high inflation. We had interest rates that were at 20-some percent trying to buy a home. My parents were real estate agents during those times. We cannot count, Representative Winkler, on a stagnant inflation. I think that the inflationary index is terrifying to the business community. How are they going to plan? How are they going to budget? How are they going to combat that? It fluctuates so quickly. And yes, we've been in a stagnant economy, but if you look back just in the 80s, the 70s, I mean, my parents are real estate agents in the late 70s, and house to get a loan on a house, it was like 21% interest. So I don't think we can count on the fact that it will be gradual or moderated, or, you know, we have to look at all of these changes. Like I had said yesterday, that we can't look at it in a silo. We have to look at all of the things coming at businesses at the same time. This is one component of many, many, many things that are coming at us. The business-to-business taxes, in totality, all of those taxes are estimated to raise another $3.7 billion coming out of the private sector. Then you add on that the energy mandates, and I just had a conversation with Xcel Energy yesterday, and they were talking about, you know, if we have an additional raise our mandate up to 40% of renewables, and then you add on top of that 10% solar, that is an extremely expensive avenue to obtain our energy. So if we really do go down those paths, that's going to be an incredibly expensive endeavor for the state of Minnesota. Then I talked to someone from the Ag Department, one of my colleagues that are on the Ag Finance Committee, and they were talking about biodiesel. So now we're going to increase the mandate on biodiesel. So now our fuel for all the trucks that transport everything are going to be paying more for their fuel. So now we're hitting it at the business-to-business, the energy, the biodiesel to transport everything on trucks. Then I'm in transportation finance, and so now we're talking about increasing the gas tax, increasing the wheelage tax, increasing every conceivable thing so that we can have a world-class transportation system that costs $50 billion more out of the private sector. Representative Winkler, we need to really think about this in totality of all of these different issues. It really does feel like, as a business owner, this is coming at me like a freight train. And I think that was mirrored in many of the testifiers that came forward. This is like a huge, incredible freight train coming at us. And I fear that if we are purported to be for the little guy, for that we want jobs in this state, I think we're doing everything the opposite to keep jobs in this state. I fear that the jobs are going to be leaving. And I think Representative Kiefer spoke very well to that. She has business owners right on the border that are going to be heading to Hudson, Wisconsin. If you talk to Representative Lean, he tells you what it's like up in his district because he has North and South Dakota right there, and the businesses are going that direction. We have to look at this in the total picture of the states around us, and are we going to be competitive? We are already ranked 45th out of 50 for business friendliness by the Tax Foundation. Now, you can argue all of those points, but the point is, if we want to be business friendly, we need to look at all of these things, and they are coming at us like a freight train. Business can only flex and only adapt so much before they break, they close their doors. And if you just look at some of the testimony, they were talking about, well, we're going to have to reduce hours. We're going to lay people off. We're going to hire fewer people. We're not going to invest in Minnesota anymore. I even heard from the pork producers. They were here yesterday. And they said, between the regulation, the increased costs, we're not going to expand anymore in Minnesota. We're going to Iowa. The pork producers. If we're going to kill our ag industry, is that really the right choice? I asked them. I said, all right, you guys, what do you think of a $10.55 minimum wage? And they're like, well, we pay more than that, but here's the repercussions of that, Representative Winkler. Now their guy that they have come in, you know, they pay their high school kid $10.55, but they have someone else come in, and they're going to have to pay them $12, $13, $14, $15 an hour. And this sweet little couple said, you know, it's just us on our farm, and if we have to pay that much, we don't even pay ourselves that much. It's a very marginal industry. They get the pork producers, the poultry people, the beef producers. They don't get any subsidies whatsoever. They're completely self-sustained, which I applaud them for. That's a fantastic business model. But at what point do we say we want jobs in the state of Minnesota? And as a job provider, I question that. With this freight train coming at us. I don't know, Representative Winkler. I don't see how we can do 1055. And then I haven't even gotten to the point where I talked about last night of, so now we have the long-term care providers. We've got those that are taking care of our severely disabled. I told you that I had been to a home, and they are extremely concerned. This home that serves 12 wonderful adults that with severe disabilities, they can't sustain this increase because their income is capped by the state of Minnesota. And I know you had graciously said to me that we could work on a bill that we could, you know, provide more funding through the Medicaid rates to long-term care and to the disability people. But I think it's really important to look at this as a total picture of where do these consequences start, end, and finish. And I have great concerns about this bill for that fact alone. And I think my biggest concern as a business owner is the index for inflation.
Very good. Thank you for your input. Representative Mason?
Thank you, Chair. I guess I would like to counter some of the comments that were just made. Definitely, I've heard from a number of restaurant owners in my district, and they're not pleased, and they actually probably are closer to terrified. But I'm looking at the index as being the saving grace. I mean, it's been a long time since we've changed the minimum wage, and this is looking forward. And my thought is, at least if we were addressing it on a regular basis, we wouldn't be in this predicament.
Thank you, Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to comment on that, this is a perfect segue. The saving grace, I think what we're looking at is helping people get out of poverty. So to the author of the bill, do you have hardcore data that shows that raising a minimum wage has impacted poverty levels? Has it actually brought people out of poverty? Do you have that? I'm just wondering where this bill's coming from. Thank you. And I've got a follow-up, too.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiefer, the goal of this is not simply to bring people out of poverty. The goal primarily is that there are two principal supporting reasons for this. Number one, if people work and they work full-time, they should get close to being able to make enough money to support themselves and their families. And that's the direction we need to head in. That's the concept of a living wage. And as I said yesterday, this minimum wage bill does not solve that problem, but it moves in that direction. Second of all, I believe it is good economics. We had a lot of testimony on both sides of this issue, but from the businesses who were testifying in opposition, their only review of this was based on their cost. There is no review from them on the increase in purchasing power that is available in their community. The experts that we had at the beginning, and I know you discount some of what they say, but I think there is very much truth in the point that business and the market is very dynamic and can handle a lot of these kinds of changes quite well through increasing productivity, by compressing some wages internally, by reducing some business profits, and increasing the staying power of their employees, reducing turnover. Those are all economic benefits which fall on top of the extra demand in the economy that this produces because of the marginal propensity to consume, the fact that people who don't make much money will spend whatever little money, more money they can get because they need to. So I think that this has a positive economic benefit. I think moving to an economy where we focus not just on the businesses, not just on the supply side of the economy, but on both sides, on the demand side, and recognizing that you need to have a strong middle class, you need to have people who work and are able to support themselves and buy things, that the economic driver is not just one, it's not just the other, but for too long our policy has focused solely on businesses and the supply side of economics. I think that's the great testament to Ronald Reagan. He made us forget all about the other half of the economy, and we need to start turning that around. So my data is the same data you've seen for the last 2 days. If we raise the minimum wage, as we're contemplating here, about 500,000 Minnesotans will get a pay increase. Hundreds of millions of dollars more will be recirculated in the economy. A lot of businesses will adjust, and a lot more will benefit from doing this. And so I think it is just good policy. It does not solve poverty, but it is a step in the right direction.
Representative Keeper, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just going to have to agree to disagree that this is not good economics. Staying power is up to an individual, not the government. When someone gets a job, it's up to them to become a good employee. And how do you become a good employee? You have a good education, you have a good work ethic, and then you prove yourself in a company, and the employer either appreciates you, or sometimes you realize you're much better than the employer thinks, and you say goodbye and start your own business. So there's lots of ways that people rise up and start to earn wealth in their life. I'm assuming you did mention wage compression, and that was my next point. Wage compression will happen. When you raise the floor, everything goes up. And I want to point to page 3 of Monday's testimony. Dr. Hall had a union coverage versus median wage, and it's showing the prevailing wage. And Minnesota right now is an outlier in prevailing wage. Will this, in fact, push us even further as an outlier in prevailing wage, or do you see this not being affected by wage compression if we do indeed raise the minimum wage? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiefer, I think when they talk about wage compression, they talk about the fact that the difference between the top and the bottom will be smaller. So people who are making more money will get slightly smaller raises, and people who are making less money will get slightly bigger raises. That's the kind of compression we're talking about. I actually don't know about the impact of this on the prevailing wage, but I do generally believe that if we are a higher wage state and that's reflected in a higher prevailing wage, that's better for our economy. When more of us are making more money, the economy does better, and it's been true in Minnesota for a long time. Representative O'Neill mentioned this study of business friendliness based on taxes paid. And that study that you talked about, Representative O'Neill, just measures the amount of taxes paid per capita. But, of course, taxes paid is a function of income. It's a function of how much money we make. And when we have a high median income, we're going to end up paying more in taxes. And that has been a great success model for Minnesota. People who are better educated, who have better opportunities to bargain in the workplace, people who have stronger support from policymakers and regulators to increase wages, those kind of states do very well, and Minnesota is among those. And I just simply reject the idea that by lowering wages, the state is going to get more prosperous. We might put more money into the hands of a few businesses, but that does not make the overall state economy work better or be stronger.
Thank you. Representative Driscoll?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, we had the opportunity to hear from a lot of folks giving their story on when they made minimum wage and how things happened. I just would like to share my story. It's November 10th, 1979. Inflation's running rampant. Interest rates are about ready to go up within the next year. We're about to have another presidential election. In January of that year, minimum wage went from $2.90 an hour to $3.10 an hour. I left the bowling alley that I was working at to take another job in the grocery business in a grocery store that opened in my town. $3.10 an hour is what I was making. In addition to that wage, I was provided benefits, a paid vacation, time and a half on holidays and Sundays at the age of 16. Thought that was a pretty darn good job, pretty darn good employment. Within 8 weeks of that, I was making $3.20 an hour. By the time I left that organization with the skill set that I had acquired, customer service skills, running a cash register, balancing out daily deposits, managing people, I was 22 years old. My wage went up 80% in 5 years to $5.60 an hour. Not bad for somebody who's in college. Not bad for somebody who buckled down and said, I'm going to get going. What I've learned in watching people in that last 30 years is no one stays at the minimum wage, Representative Winkler, because you either are terminated because you're not making it, or you're a promoter, or you take your skills somewhere else in a free market where you will get paid more. I left that job after 5 years to go to another job in a retail establishment that's, well, quite frankly, very near and dear to the governor's heart.
Might have been Dayton's.
Might have.
Might have been.
Where I learned another whole skill set in preservation of assets known as loss prevention. graduated from college debt free. There are a number of people who have that same kind of story that I did. There's nothing wrong with hard work and moving forward. And I know what you're going to say. That's exactly what people are doing. But from a small kid in a town of 2,500 people at that time, there weren't a lot of job opportunities, and there was a lot of competition for people wanting to get those jobs. I fear what we're going to do. One of the other things I find kind of interesting in your DE1 amendment, you might be a little afraid that this might not go exactly how you hope, because there's a provision here that says that employers can't downsize and do layoffs, and that's maybe during the 90-day training period. We had a bill last week that this committee heard dealing with staffing ratios for hospitals. We had to put a special amendment on that there wouldn't be any layoffs because of the increase in staffing on this, because we were concerned that that might have a cost to payroll. That's a problem.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I'd like to point out that the layoff language in this bill is current law that's in statute. It's just restating what's already there. And it's a great story. I think you might be interested to know that the first statutory minimum wage in Minnesota, if adjusted for inflation, would be somewhere around $10.80 an hour. So in the late 1970s, when you started work, you started with a much higher minimum wage than current workers do. And under the current minimum wage and the current college tuition, you would have to work, I think, something like 50% time year-round in order to be able to afford tuition at a public university. I'm not sure if you worked 50-50 and went to school, but that's the reality of a minimum wage and today's tuition. And you might be interested to know that I put in a bill earlier this week to cut tuition at the University of Minnesota and Minsky. So maybe you can sign on to that, sign on to this, and pretty soon you can give that same opportunity that you had to a new generation of students.
Representative Driscoll.
Well, Representative Winkler, you invoked the name of Ronald Reagan earlier today. There you go again, Mr. Winkler. You can't cut tuition, take money out of Minsky, raise minimum wages. I would like to know where this magic vault of money is that we've been missing all these years. This has a direct impact on the economy. It's a give-and-take economy. You asked about how I was working. I'm happy to answer that. Because in addition to working about 25 hours a week in the grocery industry, I also went and got my real estate license at 18. I was the youngest member of the St. Cloud Board of Realtors. Worked my butt off selling real estate part-time so I could be debt-free. Another set of skills that I learned. And you know what the minimum wage in that job was? How hard I worked and how much I sold. That was my minimum wage.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great story, Representative. Really is. But I would like to speak. I would like to speak to the inflationary adjustment that's in this bill, and it's very dangerous. And I think most of us know that it's bad business to tie yourself to something that you can't control. And that's exactly what we're doing. Now, we open up the paper every day and we read about quantitative easing. And the Federal Reserve Board is pumping hundreds of billions of dollars into the market, into the money supply in this country to prop up the economy right now. And we know it's very weak. But when you're increasing the money supply, when your little dollar you pull out of your wallet, and there's billions more of those things floating around now than there used to be, that thing's going to be worth less. And I think we all know that once the economy really does turn around and start moving forward, the Fed's biggest deal is going to be to try and stop inflation. And it could take off like a rocket, and we could see inflation like we saw during the Jimmy Carter years. It's entirely possible. And Bernanke and the boys, that's their biggest fear. We know that. Anybody that studies that. It could be around the corner. And so if we do this, we could be totally out of control for the business community. We could revisit this as time goes on. You have several years in advance here in the bill up to 15 or 16 or whatever it is. But to tie to inflation is something that we don't control. The business community could be looking at, well, during the Carter years, 17 to 20%. It's not a good idea. It's not a good idea. And with what's going on with monetary policy, with the Federal Reserve Board, we could definitely see it. So I just ask you to consider that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. You go, Representative Lane?
There seems to be some discussion as to whether there's enough money out there to do this, so to speak. Listening to the radio coming in, an interesting point. The European, the EU is discussing putting a cap on the bonuses for bankers, that their cap for their bonus would be the size of their yearly salary. And oh dear, they may leave and go to the United States where there is no cap.
Well, that works.
So here is the same story at a different level. But the point is, the money is out there. It's just that it has gone up, and we need to make sure that we turn this a little and make sure that the people who actually are spending the money at the restaurants, at the retail stores, seeking more construction, can have some money to do it with.
Okay, Representative Mason?
Two things. One is, mainly what I'm hearing is that the minimum wage is just for the beginning workers. And in door knocking, there have been so many people in their 50s and 60s that have lost good paying jobs, and what their work, they are just struggling to get any type of work, and they are the people that I'm seeing that are holding these low wages. And that to me is, that's one of the reasons that I'm voting for this. The other thing that I think was really important yesterday is one of our testifiers mentioned, again, the CEOs have gotten raises to the point of 700%, and we really haven't figured out a way to address that. Those are the bigger issues that we need to take. As Representative Winkler says, there's a lot of work we can do. This is just one thing, and hopefully if it'll help the lower end, and I also, again, I cannot tell you how many people I know that haven't had a raise in years. So this is, hopefully this will help stimulate and encourage people to go ahead.
Representative Fisher?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much support minimum wage going up. And I think some of the areas that people are addressing, the concerns from business, it's good to hear those. And I think part of it is taking a look what comes first, chicken or the egg. I hear we're in a fragile economy. And I think part of the reason is because we don't have enough consumer demand and people spending money. And when you have minimum wage going up, all of a sudden the people that are in those jobs, are many of them are working part-time jobs. They're and that's because businesses don't have enough hours to keep them going full-time. In the service industry, many of those folks are scheduling as business would is when the demand is. And so a lot of the people working those jobs are sometimes working only 4 or 6 hours a day, maybe 3 or 4 days a week. So that kind of has an impact when you see so many people that are part-time, and that's why a lot of those part-timers have to hold multiple jobs. But as you raise the minimum wage, because these people are very tight in how they're living, most of what comes in all of a sudden is going right back into the economy, and this is what's going to cause demand to come back around, and that's what we've been missing. That's why our economy is so fragile, because having worked in the business industry, I never hired people because we had extra money sitting around. We only hired it when we had the demand there, and we did not have the demand as when we started laying people off. And I think our great recession just had was a prime example of that. Is in the middle of the recession, it wasn't that businesses were afraid to hire people because of wages costs. They're afraid because they did not have the demand there. And I think a lot of what went to solve that problem is when stimulus came through and people started to spend some of that money. And that's a big portion, is whenever the businesses have the demand there, they will put the people on and make sure that they take care of it. And I know that in some of the border situations, as we heard from the restaurant person in Representative Kiefer's district, you know, they're taking a look that they might move over to Wisconsin. You know, and that will drive some businesses, but that doesn't mean the demand will follow them. I live in that part of town. I frequent some of those restaurants. If they move to Wisconsin, I'm not going to go over to Wisconsin. I'm going to stay on this side of the river and go somewhere else. Now, some may find it's more advantageous to go over there because of that, and that's their right, but that doesn't mean the demand is going to follow them. And that's part of the equation we have to keep in mind, is demand for some of these things are still going to be on this side of the river. These are important things. Some other things, you know, we were talking and hearing from Representative Driscoll back in the good old days, and I remember those good old days when I went to college back in the late 70s, early 80s. Back at that time, college cost, I only paid one-third of it. Our students these days are now paying two-thirds of their costs and incurring huge debts. A lot of those people are the same people that are going to be in the same category that we're helping out. Every little bit we help there means that's less debt that they might have, and that gives them the opportunity when they come out to be stronger and be able to get their first house quicker and to be able to move up quicker in the economy by helping keep our consumerism going. The other part that comes into it is when I'm looking at the overall fairness of it, is that I hear the reference to teenagers and young adults. Well, there's a lot of teenagers and young adults who their first jobs that they're getting are minimum wage jobs, but these are also some of the same people that are homeless, don't have the backup support, and so some of these people that we hear in those figures are also the same people that need to have a living wage so that they can get their first place and be able to be successful as they go forward so they have the opportunity to move up. And with where minimum wage is now, it's very challenging for them to be able to do those type of things. So it's very important that we work hard. And I hear the concerns from the other side, and I hear the concerns from businesses, but I feel very strongly that what this will do is we've seen years of trickle-down economics, and I'm just not seeing it working. We're in a fragile economy, and I've heard, oh, it's going to work. Let's try raising us from the bottom, because when the people at the bottom start coming up, it raises the rest of us, and I think this is a great way to get to that.
Very good. Representative Kiefer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, I didn't say restaurants were going to go over the border. I'm actually hearing from like home-based CPA firms that might rent a small office in Woodbury, and they can rent something and establish their business on the other side of the border, so that will actually save them money. And I just have a quick question again for the author. You've heard a lot about the tip credit, and I know there's a lot of talk about this. Would you be willing to consider a bill to address that issue, because we heard a lot of concerns about that from the restaurant industry? Thank you.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiefer, I've said before, and I would reiterate, that I am willing to consider any change in this bill that will have the effect of moving people's wages up, but without causing an undue burden in any one particular business or industry. My goal is not to punish business. My goal is to make sure that workers get a better wage. And so I am open to that discussion. In the past, I certainly have not supported a tip credit. I know that Hospitality Minnesota has a different version of that they're considering. I have not looked at that very closely. But I, certain members, I'm open to changes in this bill to make it work. This is a starting point. And, you know, Representative Kiefer, you raised inflation. This has been raised a number of times. I don't share the Uglum view of monetary policy, but even if I did, keep in mind that if inflation is high, that means that businesses are charging more for their goods. That means all of their other costs are rising. That means the whole economy is getting more expensive. And if you don't raise the minimum wage at the same time, all you're doing is holding your labor costs down while everything else is going up. So, I mean, that's the whole point of tying this to inflation, that even if we have sort of a pre-Paul Volcker experience again, we are not going to leave the workers behind. Their wages should go up with the cost of everything else, in my view. So anyway, Representative Kiefer, I am open to a conversation about this, and obviously the Senate's starting from a very different place, and I'd welcome working with you.
Thanks. Any follow-up?
Thank you.
Representative Metza?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I've been thinking kind of my story since you told yours, Representative O'Driscoll. And, you know, I'm part of a generation who, we have major corporations. I'm not going to mention them by name. I think many of you can draw the same conclusion, and company coming to mind whose health care plan, when you go in and get a job and you're getting paid minimum wage, is basically to help people fill out government paperwork to get on, you know, a government plan or subsidized health care for some way, shape, or form. And raising a minimum wage, in my mind, and I wish we didn't have to do this legislatively, to be honest. I wish all the businesses out there went and said we want to pay our employees enough to make sure that they can go put a roof over their head and have food on the table. And in a perfect world, that'd be great. But, you know, and not everyone's in that position. So there will be, you know, pros and cons to it. But, you know, I think when we're dealing with major corporations and we've got families who have billionaires because of their business, it's great that they were successful. It's great that they're providing jobs in this country. But to a certain degree, it just makes me sick to my stomach that they're doing that on all of our backs here. And when we're creating those programs and they're taking advantage of the system because of the way it's set up, you know, this is one example of, I think, our way as legislators to equalize working people. You know, I challenge any CEO who's opposed to this to come sit down in the room and, you know, talk with us. That's one great thing about our electoral process. Is, you know, I don't have to have $100 million in my bank, and I can guarantee you it's way, way less than that on the salary we get here, which averages out to about $14.90 an hour from my quick math on the calculator on average if you take your 40-hour work week through the year. And so, you know, looking at it, I just think we need to be fair with our policy, and we're here as government to make sure that both business and the employees are getting a fair shake. And going back with my district, you know, we talk about companies taking care of people. The miners who first went on strike weren't getting treated that fair. They're getting stuck down in holes, you know, dying of many different things, terrible working conditions. And these are companies with people like Carnegie who's out there, and they were driving a great machine, which is now the country we live in and the great economy we have. And, you know, bottom line is, with all of it, without getting too far into the weeds here, we need to regulate as a government to make a level playing field for the average working person. And that's why we're here, to a certain degree, to provide that protection to the common worker. So
very good. Thank you. We have Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Sundin, and then we're going to give the final word to the author of the bill, Representative Winkler. So, Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fisher and Representative Benson both reminded me of a couple things that I didn't talk about earlier. And Representative Fisher was talking about tuition and the cost of tuition during the time that he was in college, and he was in just before I was. When I started college in the summer of 1982, my tuition, I think, per credit was right around $16 a credit. And when I graduated from college 5 years later, it was at about $35 a credit. So that more than doubled during that time. So when we look at the adversities that Representative Winkler is talking about with tuition being as high as it is, when we are in similar economic times that we are now to what they were during that time, of 81, 82, 83, 84, those were often known as the greatest recession times since the Great Depression, which have only been set aside for these times that we're looking at as being the greatest recession since the Great Depression. So from the struggles that people are seeing during those times, there is a parallel. And inflation and interest rates, trying to sell homes at convincing people that it's a great deal to get in and own real estate when you have to pay a 12% interest rate on your mortgage is not the easiest thing to do. They did get in, buy real estate, and for the most part, those folks have been rewarded for that purchase. And to Representative Metz's comment about larger corporate America and some of those types of things, one of the things that I can also tell you in my years of growing up in the central Minnesota area is we had a lot of family business names on there who are great, great philanthropers to our community in central Minnesota. And what ended up happening was they either couldn't find anyone in their family that wanted to take the business over, or it got to the point where regulation was too onerous and they sold out to larger corporations who now have their names on those businesses because they just can't afford the economies of scale as a small business trying to keep up with the costs that are going up. And so they've made a decision to go ahead and sell their business and try to salvage what they've worked for generation after generation and preserve something for themselves for all the jobs that they provided for others over the years so that they may have something to retire on too.
Good. Thank you, Representative Driscoll. And, Representative Sundin, okay. Last comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and again, thanks to the author. I've got a couple observations I'd like to make, and then just a yes or no question at the end of this. We've had some logic presented to us by Representative Benson as far as high wages and low wages and how they affect minorities, and
if you follow that logic, I think there is some truth to it. You know, we've been told that the higher wages foster unemployment among minorities. There are numbers to support that. And the lower wages tend to lead to higher unemployment in that group. And if you follow that logic, I think it does stand true. You know, if you go down to slave wages, the slavery days, that guaranteed full employment for a lot of people. Okay. We've also been told that increases in the wages will threaten the financial survival of numerous businesses. And this is the same argument we've heard every time a wage increase is considered. That's 12 times since 1973. If we played back the tapes or read the testimony these last 12 times, I'm sure they'd pretty much mirror the observations we've heard today. The world is still turning for Minnesota businesses after those 12 increases. And if we continue the suppression of wages, the financial survival of minimum wage workers will continue to spiral downward. I would much rather elevate the condition of low wage earners and see them move away from government subsidized programs. We've been told by leaders of the religious community we have a moral obligation to elevate the human condition. I find it absolutely immoral that here in the United States we can bail out big banks and insurance companies that are too big to fail, but we resist the idea of allowing workers to earn a better level of economic independence. This is a matter of dignity. To the author, are my observations accurate? Yes or no?
Representative Winkler? And Representative Winkler, move from answer that question to kind of your closing comments.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, I do largely agree with you. This is about dignity, and it's about the simple idea that if you put more money into the hands of people who work, they're going to spend it, they're going to do better, their lives will improve, and our economy will improve. So, members, we're going to not always agree on these points, but I do want to thank you for the time you put into it, and I would ask you to vote in support of this bill, and I think we can, I think, you know, one way or another, getting a wage increase to 500,000 Minnesotans has to be at least a little bit good.
Mr. Chair, are those his summation statements or
that was my intention, Representative O'Driscoll, unless O'Driscoll. You've got another anecdote.
No, I was just going to ask for a roll call.
Very good. Roll call being requested. Representative Sundin renews his motion that House File 92 be recommended to pass and referred as amended to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy. The clerk will take the roll.
Johnson.
Yes.
Benson.
No.
Fisher. Hoppy.
No.
Kiefer.
No.
Lane.
Yes.
Mason.
Yes.
Metza.
Yes.
Nelson.
Yes.
O'Driscoll.
No.
O'Neill.
No.
Savick.
Yes.
Simonson.
Yes.
Sundin.
Yes.
Uglum.
No.
Members, the bill passes as amended, 8-6. That concludes today's meeting. The meeting is adjourned.